Hello and welcome back, everybody, to this week's episode of LARPs and Tarps. And today we're going to be talking to the creators of the Feast Your Eyes event, Forlorn Hope, which is a Peninsular War-based LARP set in like around the era of when the Sharp TV series came out.
Or it could be called Schlarp.
Or as it is infamously known, Schlarp. I am joined by Tom.
Hello there.
And we are joined also wonderfully by our two guests. We're joined by Harry.
Hello.
Use his full name.
Sorry. Harry Knight, creator of Forlorn, a Feast Your Eyes event by Harry Knight.
It's Harold K. Knight, right?
Harold K. Knight.
Yeah, my middle name is also Knight.
We're joined by Harry Knight Knight and Kitty.
Hello, how you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Not too bad.
Thanks very much for joining us today. I think we're about, has it been a week since Forlorn Hope?
It's been about 2 weeks because I pretty much died after Forlorn Hope.
Yeah, those first 4 days after don't count, do they? They're like Wednesday after the LARP is when you start to remember what your name is and what your job is and what you can do. Yeah,
it takes a while to reset of not having to check that you've got your sword and your gun when you leave.
It was a war zone so brutal I came back with plague.
Mate.
Oh, I mean, so I laugh, but very rough. LARP flu is a thing.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, well, it was like we had that when we first went to our first LARP because it was like fresh as flu. It's exactly the same thing. You're all just full of the lurgy.
You haven't got into the horrible pool of germs that is LARP soup as a populace yet. Yeah.
You need to get your LARP soup immunization.
We're getting there. It's been 2 years.
I think we're good now. So, this for Schlarp, Tom and I were in... Well, actually, I only crewed the Sunday, but you crewed the whole thing, didn't you?
I did crew the whole thing, and what a lovely experience it was. I have always wanted to do something revolving around the Napoleonic War, but never had the money for reenactment, so this seemed a fantastic jumping in point.
Yeah, in fact, it's... in fact, probably a good idea for you two to give us a bit of an outline of what your kind of... role within the game was, like what your responsibilities were, how you kind of helped it to come into kind of existence. I know it's very, you know, your Harry's name's on the title, but I know you've both had a big part in creating the LARP. So Harry, do you want to give us a bit of an overview of like what you did for the game, like what you are to the game, kind of like what part you played in its creation, I suppose?
So I'm the sort of quote unquote game runner. I write a decent amount of the plot, mostly the sort of main line of how the event's going, pretty much all the combat stuff, because that's kind of my forte. I generally sort of corral the crew into doing what needs to be done at the actual event. And that's kind of the long and short of it. I play a couple of NPCs, generally if the players need to be taken somewhere, or if there's pyro going off. From my X and SFX team, generally I'll have a more active hand, but a lot of the time I'm sitting in crew, kind of like Charles Xavier, just like thinking really hard about all the stuff that has to happen to make the event work, all the different timings, what encounters have to go out, what props need to be where, which is kind of where Kitty then steps in.
Yeah, it's great because I'm usually in the hot seat for a lot of the I came up with like a whole stagecoach analogy to try to calm Harry down from his like anxious ball of is this game going okay, Kitty? You know, like I'm usually in the driving seat, and so it was really nice to be riding shotgun and have a big gun and have a lovely time shooting people and NPCing and stuff, while Harry was the one who was having to deal with all of the horrible amount of anxiety about running games. But no, he's doing a fab job. And I think after the first game, Harry referred to it as like his love letter to combat crewing. And and you can really see that's very much the vibe. It's like, it's so much fun to crew this game. And the reason that the crew tickets always sell out in about 20 seconds is because it is so much fun being a little French guy running around, as I'm sure Tom will tell you.
I didn't actually play a French guy that much. I just really got into dodgy English privates.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
But, There's a lot of deserter roleplay for old Tom. Anytime I was like, I need someone kind of shifty to go in and like rabble rouse, Tom would put a shackle on sideways and he would go straight into the camp.
God, he was
It was the role I was born to play. As soon as I saw treacherous redcoat in the scripts, like, I want that one.
I feel like the real metagaming for this game was if you saw Tom enter the player field as a player, you're like, a deserter.
Shoot him. of all the graves by the end of the game that would be made by the players and like laid out in a lovely line that looked very, you know, it looked really atmospheric as like set dressing that the players were doing bit by bit. How many of those graves were you, Tom?
I think it was two in the end.
You told me three.
Okay. It could have been I think I deserted. I'm trying to remember. Was it three or four times I deserted over the weekend? It was a lot, but it was a fantastically fun time. So thank you very much for the crewing opportunity.
You just know you're a dodgy geezer now.
Little dodgy geezer. No. I must ask, how did you come up with the idea of Paul on Hope? What inspired you to do a Napoleonic Wars LARP?
So a lot of it was just me and Kitty, honestly, at stages of our youth, watching too much Sharp, really. That's kind of the starting point.
Yeah.
I've got a deep love of Sharp in all of its low-budget glory. I've got a deep love of the Napoleonic period more generally. I've got a background in history, and so that stuff really, really appeals to me. And I kind of always had ideas bouncing around my head of how a Napoleonic LARP would work, because obviously it's got to be fairly small scale. It's got to be very rules light. You've really got to play up sort of the social mores of the era. These are all the things that you can kind of build role play around. And looking at Sharp, it's like 15 people fighting against roughly the same number of French people, because it was very low budget. So therefore, it's actually quite easy to replicate in a LARP. And then I think I was probably just chatting to Kitty about it, and then they cudgeled me over the back of the head with, anyway, you've got a slot in the calendar now, so better get writing.
Yeah, that's how I do it. I've got a very similar thing. I just absolutely love... I think I just grew up on a lot of like Granada TV in the late 90s, early 2000s, and like that kind of like gung-ho, like you can clearly see that there's like eight extras in the background who are sharing five rifles, and like it's kind of low budget but making it work, and like that kind of it just really works really well with the kind of film sim ethos that we use at Feast Your Eyes and our LARP games. Like you know you're in the movie, you know you're in that kind of the setting, and you can kind of figure out what the kind of levers are to pull in that without too much help, because you can kind of figure out what would Sharp or a, you know, or named character in a similar kind of TV show do in this situation. Okay, well, maybe that's something I could do, you know. It just is a great sandbox to be playing in, and it was lovely to be working with somebody who was just like, I've got 20 ideas, because God, I don't have any ideas anymore. That well is just, I'm scraping the bottle of the barrel. At this point, it's just, you know, merchant needs help in counter number 23. Like, that's all I got. It's just 25. Yeah, it's just 25 guys. They just need help, all of them.
I mean, with the Bandits. With Hoist, you did inspire the cock cannon, so you do still have some prime material in there.
Yeah, I basically shouldn't be allowed to go in on Fridays because inevitably I'll do something awful. Well, so, okay, this is a tangent. Sorry, I know I'm awful with tangents.
No, we love tangents here.
I've heard a rumour about Matt Pennington that he's not allowed to go in on Fridays anymore because he will bring a fez from somewhere. They've locked up all the fezes. They've burnt the fezes. Fezes are not allowed anymore, but he somehow finds a fez and he goes into game and he will wear that fez and cause some sort of international diplomatic incident and then has to be taken away because he's like, I'm the king of Acevedo.
Well, you've heard it here, folks.
Yeah, that's the level I'm going for, is disruption on a Friday that will cause ripples for the rest of the weekend, and that I will be going, oh no, what have I done?
I now feel the need to confirm or deny this rumour.
Yeah, who knows? It might just be a rumor, but you know, that's what I
get. Matt, our special guest on this episode.
Matt, are you free? Are you free to jump on? We've got a question for you. Brilliant. That's I read it in the moon. No, I'm really gonna be keeping an eye out for in affairs.
Running
this is moon planet. Information, if ever I've heard it.
Serious moon information. King of Azabaya, where's affairs?
the best parish magazine in all the empire.
Crazy.
It is the it is the horrible thing of I'm that guy. On the Friday night, I show up to crew and I'll have a few beers and I'll put on whatever silly clothes are available and I'll sort of have a goofy little time with my friends. Now I have to be there like, you can't have fun. You have to do the things I've told you to do.
Yeah.
This is really important.
It's medicine.
Well, everyone ignores me.
Every time Harry is a silly prick in the crew area on like 11 o'clock on a Friday night when we're desperately trying to get out the one thing that's happening on a Friday, I can remind him of the stress that he was under at exactly that full on hope, and it really helps. So I'm just going to be doing that generally to anybody who's annoying or loud or
just you need to slowly encourage them to run a game. Like that's the slow revenge. After they've annoyed you, you should run a LARP. We've got a slot for
threaten
a LARP
running
right
game.
Now. Yeah. Deal with it. I'm going to be a silly prick for the next hour. And you have to deal with it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, don't get me wrong. Genuinely, one of my favourite games in the calendar all year is Full on Hope every time. And I'm just really cheesed to be talking about it, honestly.
Yeah, no, it sounded
because you can point at me and go, if you're not good at the crew meetings, you could end up like him. And I'm with my head in my hand.
Also, one of my favourite things about it, before we sort of start, is that Harry plays one of the main NPCs. He is like the top brass of this unit of British soldiers who were, for some reason, in the Iberian Peninsula during the Napoleonic Wars, the Peninsula Wars. And the thing about, is it the Earl of Chatham?
The Earl of Chatham.
He has such a delicate constitution. He is in charge. He is the man at the top. And he is allergic to everything or able to pick up any kind of normal disease in the region of Spain that they're in, and so spends the majority of the event hiding away in a hut going so they simply cannot ask him any questions or you know be like have to defer to that chain of command because the guy who is in charge is, well, the first one he had dysentery, didn't he?
Yeah, the first one he ate some imported oysters, which obviously did the devil's work to him.
They're very far from the sea in the game.
Very far from the sea in every game. And then in the second one, the players intercepted an oyster delivery on the Friday night, which people still say that was their favourite encounter, and I don't know whether that's a good or a bad thing.
Weren't they fresh from the Thames?
Fresh from the Thames, yes, because I want, you know, the Earl would say something along the lines of, oh, well, don't want any bloody foreign oysters, do you? These are the oysters that my father and his father used to eat. They're the best available.
These are the oysters that filter out the shit and piss of the Thames. That's what you want.
The finest oysters
Thames
around.
Fresh.
And then they took the oysters away from the Earl at the second game. That was 2 weeks ago. And so he just ate a lot of a cheese board and had horrible lactose intolerance.
Beautiful. So you've kind of moved on to my next question already. I was going to ask, you played very prevalent characters in the game. How did you enjoy playing them and how did it affect the role? Obviously, we've now heard about the wonderful Earl of Chatham. How about you, Kitty? What's your Full on Hope lead character?
So Harry needed somebody who could take people out on missions, but who also wasn't necessarily like in the chain of command, so that there wasn't like that kind of headbutting role play of, you know, but I'm actually a higher rank than you, so no, I don't want to go out on that mission. So he ended up writing me a character sort of based on Teresa from Sharp, who's one of the love interests of Sharp in the early sort of seasons. Like a renowned Spanish partisan fighter. And so it basically just means that I get to wear a lovely waistcoat and have a big gun and then occasionally show up with a terrible Spanish accent that I can't do unless I am wearing that waistcoat. And just go, something's happening, we're going this way, you know, we need to go over there. I have information, we must take it to this person. It's just a bit of a plot device so that we can actually get, you know, information out there, and they can, you know, figure out a lot of it. They figure out themselves, which is one of my favorite things about this as well, is that because we've got the whole group of riflemen in the lovely green jackets, they love scouting. So we'd never have to tell them exactly where something is. We can just tell them the general bit, like, location, and then they can just have a lovely 15 minutes of finding it ahead of the rest of the battalion. So there's two Spanish players, I believe, in the last two games.
There's currently two.
I love them both dearly.
They get a lot of very fun stuff, the Spaniards. Of course, I get to write them some cool things every now and again.
It's really fun as well. Like they're because we're not in the main kind of line of order of the military. We're the partisans who are locals who have local information or who have local skills and contacts and stuff like that. It means that we kind of automatically have a bit more kind of boots on the ground kind of vibe compared to the fish out of water kind of thing that a lot of the other soldiers have. But it just also means that I get to play a character called El Gato, who is just like, I can have very silly hair. And it's also like, because of the way that Harry's written it with the kind of gender roles that we have at Forlorn Hope that isn't really part of any of the other Feast Rise or ILOC games. If you're playing a soldier, you're read as a man within the setting, regardless of like OC gender expression. If you're a civilian, there's male and female civilians. If you're Spanish, it's basically, you know, non-binary pronouns absolutely fine in the Spaniards because, you know, there's translation problems there. And, you know, who knows? There's so many genders to language outside of the English language. It's literally fine. So it kind of means that I can go to the officer's mess because El Gato is technically awarded the a lieutenant's position. However, I'm also a lady. So what would they like? A lot of them are very nice and deferential, but also rather than deferring to me as a lady, like they do to the people who are playing civilian ladies, which is a whole other side of the game, which is very fun. That plays with a lot of those kind of Pride and Prejudice kind of stereotypes, which is, you know, very much opt in. I don't know. It's a nice way to be sort of a part of every part of the game without necessarily, you know, focusing too hard on any one of them. So yeah, it's been really fun. I just like having a big gun, and I think I might have talked to you guys before about my the curse I have with guns. So like at LED, I have only ever successfully fired a gun maybe twice, whereas at this, my gun goes off every time because it's a flip lock and my curse doesn't apply. So it's a lovely time. God, I shot Harry so many times.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful.
I get shot so often at this game because I always have to lead the rest of the crew into the combat encounters when I decide to do combat, which means I'm always at the front of the big column of French infantry who get gunned down like dogs pretty consistently.
I wanted to ask, actually, what were the... how does character classes work in... the game, because I know there was a few when I did 3 hours of crewing on the Sunday. I wanted to know what was the kind of, I got the brief about the green coats, but how do you kind of, what's character creation like for the game?
So going into writing Forlorn Hope, I knew that I wanted character creation to be like very easy to remember, to feel impactful at cool roleplay moments, and to give like an inherent sense of who your character is. So going into character creation, you basically pick, whether you're a soldier or a civilian, you pick your social rank, and then you pick one of a big list of traits. And the traits are kind of what fleshes out your character a bit more, or makes you a bit more individual, and also for some of them gives you like a cool special ability. So the rifleman, for example, if you want to be Richard Sharp, the guy from the TV show, they get to, unlike everyone else in the game, they get to basically yell at the crew when they're shooting at them. So you're there, you're a rifleman, you see a crew member, they've got like, I don't know, particular facial hair like I do, or they're wearing a particular hat, and you can go, hey, you with the mustache, or you with the hat, or you hiding behind that tree, which means you're getting the crew members' attention. So it's more likely they will turn around and look at you, and then will roleplay accordingly when they shoot you. So this also means that as everyone else can't do that, it kind of replicates muskets being a little inaccurate at times. Because, you know, if you're just firing volleys into people, sure, it might not do anything, but it's a smoothbore musket. That's kind of to be expected sometimes.
I got taken out at the worst possible time by a rifleman. I was really enjoying that big, cool, fiery scene when the French were raiding the town. I got shot in an alleyway. It's like, I can't see any of the cool effects now. I want to see everything around me, but I'm just can't.
Let me crawl through this alley so my death is more cool.
Well, no, they shot me and then just stabbed me.
Aww.
I was just wiped out.
Was it like a stealth kill?
No, it was shot and then make sure he's down, stab. Well, no special effects for Tom.
No, just got to look at all the lovely photos that people take of the game and imagine what it's like.
The Togs did a great job.
They did a very good job. Them and the SFX team.
It's a beautiful game. It really is. Is that category you were just talking about, the chosen men?
Chosen men. Yeah, it's chosen men.
Which neither of us can say well enough, as well as you two probably could. But.
Chosen men.
Chosen men.
We're doing all right.
That's it.
We have to deal with...
Oily.
We have to deal with Oily, who loves to do an accent. God. And he was doing a northern accent for And Now My Watch Begins. And he'd quite frequently say a word that was just not. And I would just turn to him and be like, do you want to say that again, lad? I didn't quite catch that. And he'd be like, shut up. Because I think he was doing a Scot this weekend.
He was. Such a wonderful one of the Highlanders.
I couldn't go near him. Like, I couldn't go near him when I was being Elgato, because it was such a contagious accent. And because I do a terrible Scottish accent with Five Kingdoms as a dwarf, it was like a player character that now is occasionally an NPC. And so every single time I went over to him, I had to be like I'd start saying, "Aye!" in response to his terrible Scottish. So bad. Did you hear that they sort of adopted an extra Scot, like a proper Scot, a real Scot, who was
real
their lieutenant?
Scot.
Yes,
they
did.
He wasn't expecting to be in charge of a regiment of Highlanders, because he just assumed he'd be the only Highlander.
Then there was loads of Highlander privates who were just like, "Orders, sir. What do you want us to do?"
Lead us.
Just imagine it. You show up to a game. You don't know anyone. You're not expecting to have actual command. And you've immediately got four people doing a bad impression of your own actual accent. Going up, drinking iron brew, sharing tablet and
kilts
and shortbread.
And little
what
floppy
do you
hats.
Do? It's so silly.
I mean, that
I feel like I should be mad, but
I absolutely loved you and Circuit setting people up in the officers' mess, by the way, Kitty, and getting your accents crossed.
Oh my god, yeah, it was awful. Every single time Circuit is crewing and I know that there's going to be bad Scottish accents around, I'm like, I'm really sorry. Also, the Scots are always the first to arrive, because there's like four of them now who get the coach down from like various places. Like, they get an overnight coach on Thursday night, which is just a level of commitment that very few of us
It's unhinged.
They arrive at like 10 a.m. and they're like, "We've not slept. What can we do,
like,
Diddy?
Circuit or Nathan or Aiden to shop," and they're just like, "You're right. Yeah, we thought we'd just nip down." It's like, what do you mean nip down? It's like a 12-hour
from the station.
So, yeah, because they get the sleeper, don't they? So like they end up being it's insane. I think it's madness, like, us coming down, because it takes us, like, 5 hours.
I've learned how much I rely on you going to this LARP. 11 hours it took.
Yeah, you took the coach down, so it took you, like, the best part of a week to get there.
God bless Northern Transport. Anyway, back on topic.
Oh, yeah, sorry. So, what are the other traits, Harry?
There's a bunch of really good ones. One of my favourites is wealthy. Which is, so if you're wealthy at the start of the game, I will give you between 3 and 4 massive checks, which are like comedy checks. They're pretty big. And basically these represent like more money than a person could easily carry. They're like big money. and you can kind of just use them to do whatever. Most encounters have like a, if the players offer you a massive check, you are just bribed instantly and just spill your guts. So wealthy's a lot of fun.
I didn't see any of the massive checks.
The massive checks.
Did one get used? There was that. There was a pair of players who both fell in love with the same NPC woman. Wasn't there? Yep. And one of them paid the other off with a massive check to go away and let him marry her.
Yes, they did. I think there was also at the last game, I believe, when visiting like a Spanish refugee camp to give out arms. They gave a massive check out to the person like leading up the refugees to basically like buy supplies. A massive check. other than the massive checks, there's Die Hard.
I feel like
as well, which is just
I feel like
kill over.
I feel like
massive check.
I feel like when you're giving a massive check, every time you have to pause and look to camera.
Yeah.
Like in character, you have to stop. Hey. Will you come with us on this dangerous, life-changing mission if I give you this massive check?
You just need two confetti cannons to shoot out every time as well.
Yeah, like, you know, they captured like a French officer and they're like, I will never reveal our secrets unless you have a massive check.
You can't really see the twiddling of the moustache over like podcast.
I feel like you're missing. Feel it.
That was part of the format.
Yeah,
Duelist is fun as well. Like, there were a couple of really good duels last event.
Duelist is good, just makes you better at winning duels. Die Hard is a personal favorite because there's a traumatic wound system, a Forlorn Hope, where occasionally a ref will just hand you a little slip of paper. On the outside, it says, like, this is how you're feeling at the moment. And often it's like, you've been shot. And on the inside, the surgeon characters, surgeon being another trait, which you can take if you want to be a doctor, can open these up, which will tell them how to heal you, basically. Die Hard lets you ignore the effects of a traumatic wound until the current encounter ends, and then it just kicks in immediately. So it's classic, like, I've been mortally wounded, but I'm so hard and cool that I just keep going until I get back to camp, and I immediately fall on my face, and I'm just bleeding to death in front of everybody.
It's the classic, like, there's just been a massive skirmish, it's been very physical, and then all of a sudden the main character pulls their hand away from their stomach and it's covered in blood.
Ah, shit.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly. And they're like, I'll be fine. And actually, they're not fine.
Yeah. Actually,
is that what old Colander Cavendish has?
I don't think Colander Cavendish does have that. I think Colander Cavendish is a fop. So he can just speak French and is foppy. Which I think is...
That sounds like the best character choice in the game.
That's why most people are fops if they're an officer. If they're an officer.
I have a brother of Thor Scott, sir.
The amount of times that line about horse guard was said over the weekend, it made me truly happy. Who doesn't have friends at horse guard at this point?
Yeah, quite frankly. Are they all the same guy? Like,
they all went to like the same private school and one of them got into horse guards and the rest just leaked.
I have friend in horse guard. I'll have you know.
That should be one of your NPCs next time. The friend from horse guard comes to visit.
I'm going to write that down.
I wanted to. So you spoke about the surgeons, and I wanted to ask a question because I heard about a particularly grisly piece of special effects.
Oh, I was so gutted I didn't see the special
effects. I really want to hear about, which involved a saw, and I'd love to hear more about like that in addition to some other gory effects.
So part of the reason that Tom didn't see that is because all the people who came on the horrible traumatic wound encounter at that point. The people who, because there was two missions going out at the same time, and one of them was what we in crew call a classic juicy boys encounter, which is a whole level of context needed for that. Where Harry, can you explain the juicy boys encounter very quickly? Maybe the original as well as
I'll explain the original and where the name came from. For those of you who can't see my face listening to this through the medium of audio, my head is firmly in my hands at this point. So at my first ever iLARP game, first ever game at Eversley, when I was still very new to LARPing, there was the bad guys were essentially Confederate holdovers who the Civil War had ended, the Confederacy had been wiped out, but there were still some diehards who were just like, we're the worst people around and we're going to keep being terrible. As part of this, there was an encounter where the players got to essentially sneak up on a little camp of these holdouts and like ambush us all out of the darkness at like 11 p.m., gun us all down. But they could also, while they were sneaking around, listen in to what we were saying because we were dropping little bits of information. And the information was essentially, oh, our reinforcements are coming and they've got a gift, air quotes. After about an hour of sitting in the woods in the cold and the dark, we kind of just completely lost the plot. our reinforcements are coming with a cannon, which is what the gift was, turned into, oh, the juicy boys are coming with the girthy gift. as well as us arguing about what mayonnaise is. It turns out the players had come out. They'd been sat in a bush for 45 minutes listening to us completely go off the deep end with essentially a lot of very homoerotically charged Confederacy jokes before standing up and gunning them down in cold blood. So now that type of ambush encounter is a classic Juicy Boys.
So there was a classic Juicy Boys going on at the same time. There was an awful lot of people in crew who basically were like, hey Kitty, so you know how when you go to a coffee shop and it's like you bought seven coffees and you get your eighth free. They were just like, we've done seven Juicy Boys encounters, can we have this one off please? And who were helping with me and Circuit and Beck and the little group of us who were kind of putting us on, pretty much all the people who were playing Spaniards were the ones who were just like, please no, we can't go and sit out in the woods yet another time and say three lines of dialogue on repeat because we don't know when the players are there, like we simply cannot, please. So they had a lovely break from that by I mean, they're going to be right back on that at Flying Lead finale. It's right back.
18
on there,
but, Juicy Boy. You're hearing it here first.
Back to back. All night. It's 24 hour time in.
24 hour Juicy Boy account.
Yeah. So basically, from the player's perspective, a group, they'd previously been to a very nice little village called Lerma.
Lerma,
I believe.
The village of Lerma.
Yeah, and they'd had a lovely encounter trying to find
it was a missing postman. A regimental postman had gone missing, and it turns out
Peter!
And it turns out he'd gone to this village where the Spaniards were celebrating because earlier in the game the players had assassinated a French general in this village. So the Spaniards were like celebrating, they were like, the French have all left, we're having a wonderful time. Our new redcoat friend has just shown up, so we've just gotten him absolutely trolleyed. So Peter the postman was having the time of his life in Lerma.
Peter the postman was a god by the end of that weekend.
Everyone loved him. Yeah, it was lovely. Like so some of the refugees from Lerma, because the whole place had been burnt to the ground on a mission that a load of them had gone out to do. We were basically playing, I was playing Elgato and Aiden was playing Alejandra, who was our kind of like our local guide for the weekend, who's a very new crew member and is doing a fantastic job at learning how to not get people lost. And I mean, an essential part of that is getting people lost and then learning how to get yourself out of that situation. But that's just a part of Eversley, you know? Yeah, exactly. So a little group of us Spaniards with horrible injuries come in and are immediately waved through the gate because they recognize like two of us and take us to the sort of infirmary area, so Circuit was there ready as the kind of relief nurse in the room, because we had a regular character called Mary, who's the nurse who's there pretty much all the time, who's played by our friend Ren. But Ren is vegetarian and didn't want to be part of this encounter, which was fair enough. So Circuit swung in as a sort of replacement, and essentially what happened was this Pablo, the crack shot of Lerma, who was like the best shooter in town, he'd had his leg blown off, and his boot was essentially just full of blood. And as soon as they had him down on the table, the traumatic wound, which was like peeled open because it was so full of blood, just said amputate in red writing that got more and more sort of deranged as it went through, and then just like a pile of blood, which is a lovely little touch that Harry did, I think.
I wrote it in, and then just dragged it through the nearest pool of fake blood I could find on like the makeup table.
Lovely. A feast your eyes classic. And so the surgeons jumped to, and they had to do this very immersive amputation scene, which involves an actual hacksaw and cut through it, and yeah, it was like, from their point of view, you know, very immersive. From our point of view, it was about 2 hours of carnage trying to get it ready. So essentially, originally, when we were writing this encounter, it was going to be another crew member who was going to be playing the injured person, who is kosher, and so we were originally going to use a pig leg, and then had to sort of be like, what does your rabbi say about using pig leg? Like, this is a level of sort of spiritual analysis that I've never had to consider when making a prop before. And so basically we're just like, right, you know, let's just like leave it off. Like, we'd already planned to use a lamb leg instead. So we just went with that anyway. And basically
I just love the idea of being like, call your rabbi. We need to right know now. If we can pretend right now if you can kosher-wise chop a pig's leg.
If it's just next to your leg, is that okay? You don't have
is
to
that
know,
fine? Like...
These are the big questions, Lark.
The fact that she's also a vegetarian. Yeah. It's kind of the double barrel that was like, okay, I'll pick someone else.
Because Johnny was just like, babe, we can't do lamb. Lamb's too nice. I will be annoyed if we have to. Like,
lamb's expensive.
Not from Costco.
Yeah, and because
fair enough.
And because we live in Wales as well, it's like that. It's like the thing that you have on menus that is really like the higher end thing that's really nice. And so he associated it with just like me basically just throwing money at the window.
It's the national leg. You can't use that.
Yeah,
it's the national leg. So God. The budget didn't go on the explosive, it went on the lamb.
Oh, yeah, no. So we had this lamb leg that, so Circuit had sort of stumbled upon me with my sleeves rolled up, wearing like rubber gloves, wandering around the Wild West town, looking very sort of confused. Like, I was fairly in a train of thought, and they sort of came over and were like, you're right. And I was like, yeah, come with me. basically, perfect person arrived at that time. So I'd had this, I'd been coating this leg of lamb in latex, but because it had been so damp, it just hadn't dried. And so H had, the RSFX like head, H had given me his heat gun, but I couldn't, it was drying the latex, but it was also cooking the lamb, and then it was also melting the table. And so I couldn't lift it up.
I didn't know about this.
Because I've got a bit of a shoulder problem. So like it was a struggle. And so I basically had Circuit on like rotisserie duty, just like turning this thing like constantly while we put layer after layer after layer of liquid latex until it had such a crust on it that it looked like a proper human leg. And then we had like a good 20-minute discussion about whether we should add hair. And so like it was just like, it looks pretty good. And then I hacked at it wildly with abandon with a hatchet until it was like clearly that was where it needed to be cut off at, you know. And then Circuit went and got a load of shrapnel and then just like jammed it all into the leg. So it looked really gnarly. And then we had a boot that had been, there was a pair of boots that were left on site by a film that we had do a little like little student film recently, and they just left a load of stuff. And so we had this pair of boots. So in one of the boots there was like a prop severed foot that was just like a rubber one that looks a bit naff. Filled the boot with blood. and then Circuit had the rest of it set up. And so as soon as we got back in position as Pablo, he was lying down with his real leg between the end of the table and the like bench that was on the end of that. So it was kind of hiding it. And then one of the, I can't remember if it was one of the Spaniards or one of the players got sent into the officer's mess to go and take the tablecloth because it was an emergency to rip open and put over Pablo so that it was like a surgical cover on him, so that all the surgeons could see was like the shape, the leg, everything there. And basically they tried to take the boot off, the like fake leg setup that was along the table with Beck's real leg, and basically pulled the boot off and then looked inside the boot and went, oh, oh no. One of the surgeons handed the boot to another surgeon, both of whom went, I'll just put that over there. the lady doctor, I can't remember. Do you remember her name, her in character name?
Oh, it has completely skipped my mind, terrible. Unfortunately.
2 weeks have gone by. We're referring to them as the Scottish doctor, the fop doctor, and the lady doctor, because all three of them were so fantastic characters that they were just sort of, they were bouncing off each other really, really well. And it was only the lady doctor who's returning from the first game. So we were really glad that she was the one who got stuck into this. Because also in character, she's not got a medical degree because she's a woman. You know, this is all just like a flight of fancy that is her hobby that she's really into. And all of the male characters, like in her like OC social circle, are just like, oh, she's so funny with her little ways and how, you know, and make sure you don't faint, darling, at the sight of blood. And there she is, like with a hacksaw in hand,
I'm pretty sure that because we wrote a whole load of icy letters, which this postman encounter basically had on him for the players to read. And so I sent out a form. All the players sent back stuff that maybe could be written about them. A bunch of the crew helped me write them. I'm pretty sure that her character's one was a rejection letter from a medical school going, don't be silly, you're a woman.
Yeah, and she got that at dinner. And then this happened after dinner. So it was kind of like a, you know, two fingers up at that school for rejecting her kind of thing. But she, you know, she was handed the saw, like she kind of assessed the situation. The two gentlemen were there to they were like in charge, but they were assisting, you know, and they were, as players, they were absolutely fantastic in like sharing game in that situation. It was fantastic.
Sure.
But they basically held out the like white enamel bowls that were filled with fake blood and bits of, you know, the foot at that point and things, and just allowed her to sort of get on with it. And then Circuit had two syringes full of fake blood underneath like all the apparatus. So as the lady doctor was cutting into it with this hacksaw and cutting through the bone, basically Circuit was then like squeezing this like jet of blood out and hitting her like in the hands and in the arms with it. So it was just like, I don't know, it was very visceral. It was very sort of old school kind of Hammer horror in a way that I really, really enjoy doing. And I think it was a very, like, it was a really intense experience. But what was really funny was afterwards, I think everyone was so like up on adrenaline, especially Beck, who was the patient, and they were like lying there the entire time, like screaming. They'd almost bitten through a leather belt because they were role playing so hard.
Beck did a phenomenal job.
Clearly nobody fantastic. They just won crew member of the year as well in the Love Awards.
Hey. Oh, that's great
for that. But they like everybody in the room sort of didn't know what to do after that, and they were sort of wandering around aimlessly holding things
covered in blood.
Going and then because these all the crew members had been this like joyful little pub in Lerma, they all started singing like "My Peter lies over the ocean." Like everybody in the room had like a rousing like verse of this terrible song that they'd been singing earlier when they were like fake drinking, and everybody sort of had like a laugh out of character and then sort of, you know, breathed and it was all kind of sort of burst the bubble in a really nice way, because I think otherwise it could have been quite stressful.
Yeah, definitely.
Going from those kind of fake emotions. But as soon as Beck got up, they fell over because the sort of psychological nature of the whole scene, their leg had sort of gone dead and they'd kind of forgotten that was their real leg, and that it, you know, their real leg was fine and hadn't been cut off. And it was such a weird phenomenon. But it was cool.
It was
a really cool.
Yeah, match. It was one of the most immersive like little vignettes I think I've ever seen it a lot. I remember I cheekily peered in from running another encounter to watch for like a couple of minutes. If you're of a squeamish disposition, I'd skip the next 30-45 seconds.
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
It was when at one point this lady doctor was soaring through the leg, got to a point where she thought she could just kind of snap the bone, which was right to the leg of the lamb, so I was twisting it like blood was going everywhere. realized that it wasn't coming off, so just got the hacksaw back out again and just went back at it. And it was exactly what I hoped.
It did look like at one point she was just going to like start biting at it to get through the last few bits. Because everybody's like surgical like tools were obviously blunted because they're props. And so when they were actually trying to cut through like the meat, they were just like, oh no. I think it was a pen knife that got through the last bit.
That is like, to think of this, like obviously this is like really cool effects and whatever, but like to think of this as an actual situation.
like, for sure.
They're like, finally then with a pen knife trying to take your leg off.
I mean, it's why it was so impressive that people got it down to like 30 seconds, like get it cut off and sewn back up.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way you can do it without anesthetic, you know?
Yeah.
I think LARP's crazy for that. I was talking to a friend who went to like, who goes to like a horror LARP, and they had, for a scene, had recreated somebody's head out of like some edible material because there was going to be like a cannibal scene where they were going to pull someone's head off and eat their brains. And the person, someone didn't know it was in the fridge, and they opened the fridge door, saw it, and threw up because their brain just couldn't work out what they were looking at. And my friend that went didn't know this was coming because they were a player, and then they saw this head get revealed. And what they'd done is there'd been an actual person there, and then whilst people weren't there, they'd switched them out, and then like they pulled off this person's head and started to eat it. Ooh. And she was like, for a full 5 seconds, my brain couldn't work, like couldn't figure the fact that I wasn't looking at a real person.
Wow.
Their brain was just like, and it's crazy how, like, it's funny you say, like, Beck falling over. Like, it's crazy how your brain just sees stuff and goes, I can't process what's going on there. This is too real. Help.
It's so cool. It's one of the really cool things about, like, theater and, you know, immersive theater and laugh and all that kind of, like, pool of things is just kind of what you can experience and what you can kind of process and how it all works.
We've talked a lot about the gory side of the effect.
Yeah, sorry.
Harry, tell us... Oh, no, it's great. Harry, tell us about the explosive side of the LARP. How did you get all those cannonball effects and whatnot?
So, set up? It's a game set during the Napoleonic Wars. There's got to be big bangs. That's kind of the long and short of it. If there wasn't a decent amount of pyrotechnics going off, I think you wouldn't really be hitting those kind of immersive notes of you're in a sharp episode, right? So I'm very lucky to have H, who's part of the Scientist FX team down at Eversley, who is incredibly skilled, knows exactly what he's talking about. I basically can just throw ideas at him and he'll just go, yeah. So at the first game, for example, which was the Forlorn Hope, so that involved the players storming a French held fort on the Saturday night at about 11/midnight. Some player sappers snuck up to this big fort building that there is at Eversley and laid powder charges. And the following morning, H and the rest of his team went out there, set up these big pots, which basically just throw material and debris and smoke up into the air above them. They kind of look like they're like big circular bits of tinfoil, basically. So one of the players ran up to like a Wild West style plunger, like lit a fuse. The whole fort just went boom. Like the entire, like, how tall do you think the fort is, Kitty? Like 10 foot? 12 foot? As high as?
Two people standing on. Yeah. So like, 12 to 14 foot, I'd say.
The like cloud from these pyrotechnics going off was about the same height, like completely obscured it, like tongues of fire, the whole nine yards. At the last game, so 2 weeks ago, we had the opportunity for the players to find and operate a cannon. So Eddie fortunately had a cannon hanging around just casually.
Like you do.
Yep, casually. So they were an injured cannoneer who instructed the players through the proper Napoleonic procedure of loading and firing a cannon so it doesn't explode in your face. On the path up towards the cannon, which is where the crew were essentially going to, as French soldiers march in column, there was a whole bunch of these pots hidden around. So we synced it up decently well so that when the players finished loading the cannon, it went off using a blank fire gun in a bucket to make the initial noise, and then the SFX team detonated one of these pots. So the players get the fun of seeing the crew getting covered in shrapnel, getting covered in debris, getting flung around like ragdolls. Because in the first game, that encounter had been reversed and the players had been having to march through all these pyrotechnics going off on either side of them while they kind of advanced up the valley, which the fight was in. But other than that, I mean, we had the burning of Lerma, which has been mentioned before, where we ran it at night. And essentially it was set in the Wild West town, which Eversley has. And we set up these big SFX pillars of flame, basically. And we used smoke machines to fill the whole place with smoke. So the whole place was like backlit by these massive flames. So the smoke sort of glowed this really eerie orange. There was smoke billowing out of like random houses from where some of the SFX guys, like Jay, for example, were in there with smoke machines. Looked absolutely fantastic. I mean, I think I owe a lot of Forlorn Hope success to the SFX team and their willingness to essentially sort of figure out what they need to do from the very bad, rough guidance I write for them in all my plot docs.
I heard from the first Forlorn Hope about the effects, like, ooh, I really need to go and see them. Hence, it's one of the reasons why I was so desperate to crew this one. It looked phenomenal, dude. You both did a fantastic job in making it feel like a peninsula hellscape.
Because the thing for me, the SFX like Big Bangs help with so well, is the immersion isn't just the aesthetics. It's also like the noise and the smell and the sound. Yeah. You know, when you can actually smell like cordite and you can just hear these like vroomps going off in the background, it all just works. It just works.
I think I think you're right on that, because the experience was really good in the final battle we were in. There was less pyro, but there was like still that really good vibe. But it's also like after a gunfight in Flying Lead, for example, and there's like the smoke and the smell in the air, and it really does kind of take you there. So I can very much see it. And I hear that Forlorn Hope episode 3 is going to have even more pyro.
That is the plan.
Yeah, I think the last one had a little less, right? Like the first one definitely had more pyro than this last one. But partly the idea of that was that we weren't going to kind of jump the shark and like every time have to like ramp it up more and more and more and more and more. So like slightly different concepts, just, you know, for this next one.
It's going to be big. It's going to be real big. I've already got some.
Calling the neighbor.
I've already got some fun plans. The neighbor's going to be real upset. Well, things are in motion. We've raised the price point of the tickets explicitly, so all of the extra money from that increase in price is all going on pyrotechnics. So it's going to be a real stonker.
It sounds I won't be able to go to the third one, unfortunately, but it sounds absolutely amazing. I did want to actually touch on something interesting that we've kind of mentioned lightly, but I wanted to talk about it a little bit more. Feast Your Eyes and ILARP games are often gender blind, I guess, is the best way to put it. It's like it doesn't really play a role in anything. But in this game, it does. And I wanted to know how you kind of handled that, like, because it was like a different thing. And obviously there are, I think it's part of the ILARP brief, is that there's these situations which are problematic and difficult for some people. But then in this game, I know it's kind of like a core part of the period. So I just was interested how you kind of handled that when you were making the game and running the game and stuff like that.
So a lot of that was kind of written by two of our friends, Esme and Ren, who kind of consulted with both of us at the start of that to kind of figure out what would be fun and what would be too much. Because like it's such a great part of the Sharp setting, is the kind of the real dumb cliched like female characters who are either like falling in love with Sharp immediately or, you know, betraying him in some hilarious way. You know, it's such a... It's just really tropey and really fun to play with that kind of like villainous character or heroic character, like heroines, that we just didn't really see a way that it could be gender neutral in the same way that all the other kind of games are. But it is definitely something that like Harry and I went back and forth on for a long time. Probably the most difficult thing about writing this game at the start, wasn't it?
Definitely. I think, I can't remember exactly who said this. I think it might have been Ren, but it was essentially... what we didn't want was for a reenactment perfect, period accurate example of Regency sexism, because that's not fun.
Sure.
We wanted to get all of those like Jane Austen tropes, all of those Sharp tropes, all of those, you know, Master and Commander tropes. The things that are fun to play off. Things that make the setting, like, you know, what it is, that makes the Napoleonic period what it is. But without in any way it feeling like if you were playing a female character, you wouldn't be having as much of a good time, even if you, like, if you didn't want to buy into that roleplay, right? And I think the really nice thing is that a significant number of the female characters at the last two games have been very happy to buy in. For example, like earlier I mentioned the letter saying you're not allowed into medical school. That wasn't my idea. That was that player writing in on this form and going, maybe this would be a really cool thing to like show up in the game. And that's really great because I don't want to impose kind of on people the sort of game they can enjoy. So it's a really tricky scale. It's a really tricky balancing act.
Yeah.
But I think largely thanks to Ez and Ren and Kitty, I think we've kind of managed to hit it pretty well.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, it's really good.
I've been enjoying it. Like there was a moment on the Saturday night where all the men had gone off. So all of the soldiers and the two Spanish partisans, plus then a couple of the surgeons just to make sure things were okay, had all run off round to Lerma to go and like deal with this big fight that was, you know, with the fire and, you know, the kind of, you know, moonlit, beautiful fire encounter. And so we kind of realized that the ladies were also kind of left behind. And so we OC ran over to just watch it kind of out of character just so that we could see the cool thing. And then as soon as the players had, you know, the fighting players had left that encounter area and the crew were kind of striking the set and turning off all the fire and everything, we went, should we barricade ourselves into the officers' mess? And so, El Ghetto and I can't remember what Ez's NPC lady was this time, but one of the other like female characters, all the like upper class ladies, kind of ran into the officers' mess, which they were allowed access to, but a lot of the other, because there's also a lot of like class divide as well between the kind of officers and the enlisted men, and that's another kind of binary within it. But because the ladies have access to the officers' mess, we went inside there and we were just like, what fun can we have while they're out that they can come back to? We started barricading the walls, and then so there'd been like a full officers' dinner with name settings around the room, and so we just took all the benches and all the little stools and started making barricades on both the front and the back, and then we started drinking, in inverted commas, all of the port that had been left by the officers to you know, to steady our nerves in case there was a big battle, you know. And so all three of us were just like, you know, being silly. And we'd also accidentally barricaded one of the gentlemen who was a civilian gentleman inside with us because he happened to be in there when we started making the barricade. And so he wasn't allowed to leave at this point. And then because we were drunk at this point, we started getting all the name tags and then putting them back on the chairs where they were in the barricade. and just, you know, being silly. And then, so when the officers came back from this mission and tried to go into the mess to have a sit down, every time one of them tried to open the door, this barricade was like threatening to fall on them. And they were just like, what are you ladies doing in there? Like, what do you think you're doing? And then we were just accusing them all of being French spies and that what, like, you know, they had to prove to us that they weren't some sort of French spy who was coming in here to, you know, impinge on our virtue or whatever. And like, you know, threatening them, like, bear in mind, both ladies by this point had two pistols each because, you know, it was a desperate situation. And of course, you know, in that kind of situation, you've got to arm yourself with whatever you can.
Well, of course.
And then, Yeah, absolutely. And so we only let them take things from the barricade if their name was on the stool. and like the way that they proved to us that they were proper Englishmen was there was like a whole like dinner thing that they had to do when they were passing the port, and like these like upper class games where they had to like say a particular phrase while passing the port one way and then passing the, I don't know, the rum a different way or something like that. And it was like a whole language that they had come up with that was like, okay, it is you after all, Major Fotherington, you can come inside, I suppose. But I was just having a lovely time, just pretending to be drunk, because that's my favourite thing to do at LARP.
The kit standards at this LARP were excellent, but you guys came up with the idea that people could rent kits. Do you think this made it, this game a lot more accessible? Because I know in reenactment, Napoleonic kit costs an arm and a leg.
Yeah, we had some friends who were going to come along, and they've got some extra stuff. So we had like a limited amount that we could rent out, but it did make it easier being able to sort of say, like if you need a jacket and a chaco, because they're quite difficult to get hold of, and you're within this kind of size range, then we can sort you out with that. It's a pity that like female kit is more difficult to get hold of, because that's what we're really struggling with for crew as well, especially in like a bigger size range than like Bridgerton, because a lot of the time we get job lots. It's like, well, this will be lovely for the two crew members who it'll fit, and
yeah.
You know, so yeah, it's definitely an issue. But
I think the kit was all, again, it was really fantastic there, like, especially from the crew side as well, because wearing like the blue coats and stuff, everything was really good from that side. But yeah, like you say, I guess it is. I know there was a few ill-fitting coats, but the thing, I guess, with like dresses is they're even more like fitted. So getting them to fit well, I imagine.
I've got the guns. So the trouble I have is that like I'll try on a dress and be like, this is nice, and then I'll flex at all.
It'll just explode off your body in a single movement, leaving just no sleeves.
Yeah. It's terrible. It's a terrible problem to have. But what I sometimes have to do with the French jackets and the red coats in particular, sometimes I have to line up all the crew and then make them swap and go like, why are you wearing a 48 inch chest when you're clearly like a 38 inch chest? You give that to him. You take that one. You swap as well. And then it's just like a very silly, like, have you ever seen when a crab is like a hermit crab is like getting out of its shell, or they found a new shell and it's too big for the one who's found it. And so they'll form a chain and then all swap. Basically like that. Crew basically like hermit.
That's exactly
crabs.
What it's like. It's the one thing I get asked the most about this game from people who are interested is, do you expect me to drop £8,000 on a perfectly accurate Napoleonic cost? It's like, no, not really. It's this game,
not
like,
even slightly.
This game, like all the Feast Your Eyes and the I Love stuff, is a film sim. So it's meant to be cinematic, Hollywood-esque, rather than one-to-one perfect.
Yeah.
If you want to do one-to-one perfect, hell yeah, I love that stuff. I'll shake your hand personally in the car park.
Heard that, folks.
And then he'll kill your character.
I'll kill your character in the car park.
And take your kit.
But the nice thing is again, like, we have all the whole ILOP kit storage, which obviously means we can outfit crew and a whole bunch of things. And also, there's a lot of archetypes which don't require the same level of investment as other things, right? If you want to be like a high-ranking officer, and that means you've got to have everything proper, that'll probably be kind of expensive. But like in Sharp, most of the rifleman characters in Sharp wear like a bandana and have their jacket really open to show off their chest, you know, and it's just green trousers underneath that, right? And that kind of is like your base layers. So the jacket's a bit of an investment if you want like a proper one, but everything else you can get fairly cheap. The Spanish guerrillas are really, really easy to do. You know, just some brown trousers, a waistcoat, a kind of white, slightly fluffy shirt, a poncho or a cape of some kind, and a big hat. You're sorted for a Spaniard. And the same is true for all the civilian archetypes. Like, you can go on YouTube and type in Austin party costumes, and you will come up with 5,000 different tutorials on how to put together a full Regency outfit for like £20.
Yeah, and the Regency dresses are quite easy to make as a new kind of seamster, in particular, because it's very forgiving as a silhouette. I think you can make a lot of changes without necessarily needing to have loads of skills.
There's like Austin parties. Didn't know they existed until I started writing Forlorn Hope. Turns out they're like a massive thing. Like you know, you think LARP is sort of a slightly weird niche community. People who are super into Jane Austen novels. Very, very out there. Like, there's a whole like Austin festival in Bar. It's wild. Yeah. But anyway, it does mean there are so many resources online to get Regent to like put together Regency era costumes on the cheap. So it's do some research. Read through the brief, basically. and lots of things are available.
I would love to see more lower class female characters in this game, because we've got an NPC called Fanny the Washwoman, and she is my favourite character to write any plot for, because she just shows up. She's got a basket full of officers' pants. She will aggressively hand them to them while they're trying to have like an important meeting. And, you know, but you can kind of get away with like more kind of later half of the 18th century if you go with more lower class stuff as well, which it can be easier to get hold of, especially the kind of like cottage core stays and shifts and that kind of thing. And it just adds a lot to the overall like thing. If you've got a nice variety of like, this person's wearing stuff that's 10 years out of date because they haven't been to London to see what the latest ateliers are putting out there. You know, this person's wearing something that's 20 years out of date because they robbed it off a corpse, you know. It adds a lot to the game.
Nice.
Because of you guys, I really just want to get a shackle hat now and wear it everywhere I go. That was a big highlight for me.
It had so much height.
It did.
As a short man, I need every inch.
I think as well, like, I couldn't believe that you introduced this game to the cinematic universe that is your various characters.
The Belvedere family tree.
Yeah, awful.
blame Oily for that
I want this man to go to Legio so he can play Brutus Belvedereus.
Yeah.
Because the idea that the Belvederes have been medical practitioners on the British Isles for 2,000 years is too good.
Like Belvedius. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, Belvedius.
They're never leaving, Kitty. I'm sorry.
I think because Harry plays Legio, or played the last couple, and I think there's kind of some similarities in the way, but it's the settings that have a kind of military focus can be really fun, because like you've automatically got that hierarchy and you kind of automatically got like you can kind of happily play somebody who's quite low on that ladder and find a really fun niche within it that kind of removes any kind of like everybody being the big important shouty man. You know, that can sometimes be a real issue at LARP. Especially when people who shouldn't be in charge are in charge, because that's fun.
I honestly had the time of my life playing a skeevy private. It's everything I wanted and more, just to wind up the sergeants and the higher players. I think I got told off for having my hat crooked about 30-something times.
Yeah, good.
Still never got
they've
got
to do something. Yeah, they've got to do something. And you know, with most of them, like, it gets to the point where they've told their mates off for all the usual things. And so we need to send them in some other scrubs so that they can tell them off for some things as well.
Yeah, they'd be just standing there in his full, like, provost uniform as I send the 87th deserter to, like, grovel in front of them.
I can't believe they let so many of those deserters go, because they cried and were too sad. And so they were just like... Yeah, we can't kill these guys.
I was expecting every single deserter at this game to be shot out of hand, and I'm slightly disappointed that they were treated with more leniency than that.
I did love the ones that got lost and ran out of food when they were being inspected. They were looking for our bags, and just one of us had a sandwich in our bags. Like, yeah, we're starving behind enemy lines. Not a crumb of food.
Yeah, that's your emotional sandwich. You got to hang on to that. That's been with you since you left London.
All the way. Did you guys have any favorite moments over the weekends? Were there any event highlights for you or encounters that really made this special?
Well, I'll let you go first, Kitty. I'll push you firmly under this bus.
Oh god, okay. So Harry on Friday night made me take, like, he didn't tell me until I was literally ready to take the players out, but that I was leading the players out on the first walk-in. And so it was it's all right. Classic. I do that to you all the time. it was a really lovely time to like meet the new players and also realize that like, if we haven't told them to put really good shoes on, this will be an interesting experience for them, because I was like, I was told the route that we were taking them on, and I had a couple of other crew members with me to like help people along if they needed it. But because it had been raining so much, like in the couple of weeks before that, I did have in the back of my mind, oh God, what if this tree has come over? Or what if this whole area of the site is one big bog? And I just immediately walk them into it like, ugh. But there was this lovely moment when we were coming back down the hill once we'd sort of looped all the way down the track and come back round. So we were on the far end of site, sort of coming back on ourselves. When I realised that we had two new civilians with us, this new lady and then the new sort of gentleman surgeon. And I also had all these sort of Spaniards who were helping, help, you know, crew members who were helping us move things and make sure people didn't get lost along the way as well. We'd set the rifles off to go and scout ahead and find the one thing that had been set up that they needed to see on their way back round that was going to set the scene for everything. That was handily quite well lit so they could see it from a distance. So the rifles were off and then the redcoats were in front of us, like sort of panning out and making sure that if anybody did pop out of the bushes, they were there ready with their rifles ready and everything. And the office was doing their usual sort of sort of thing. And then these two new civilians who were very clearly sort of, ooh, we're not entirely sure what we're supposed to be doing because we're not in the line of, you know, we're not in the military side of the game and we're not you know, part of this area. Ooh, what do we do? What do we do? And there was just a moment where like one of them, I think, like slightly slipped, but like caught themselves and it was all fine. But being a terrible Spaniard, I immediately called over Dougal, who was playing one of my Spaniards, and was like, oh, this is Juan. He is he's very, very, very handsome and very, very, very strong, and he will catch you if you fall over. But he is very, very stupid, so do not ask him any difficult questions. And he helped them both down this hill in a very like exaggerated, like, oh, late my lady, like let me help you. Of course, like if you need my hand, I'm here, and like practically like swept her off her feet and carried, but like she didn't need it and she was fine, but like was ready to like be like the like dashing Spaniard who was going to like flirt with her with her husband watching, and like helped her down the hill and it was all fine. And then they like leapt across this little like gully that was quite boggy, and one of the very new officers immediately started taking off his cloak to like put it down on under her feet. Oh, so she'd be wonderful. Able to get up. It was just like the most gallant thing I'd seen. And then her husband, then in character husband, sort of like helped down, but like far more so. Like he was like delicately being held in hand by both Spaniards who were there, and like, you know, they were like, oh sir, like let me help you. And then he was practically carried over this gully by like six riflemen. Like it was that, like it immediately set the tone for like these people are upper class and therefore incapable. You know, and like, you know, the like gallantry and the like out of character, this new player was doing an absolutely fantastic job of like dealing with the terrain and dealing with the, like the lack of light and like the possible dangerous situation, but in character was like, you know, ready to be a damsel if it meant that the man in front of her was going to get shot so she didn't have to, and things. And everybody was immediately ready to be shot if it meant that she would survive because she needed to be protected with, you know, with everything. I just immediately was just like, oh yeah, this is what we're playing again, this is really nice, like cool. Like the gender stuff can be difficult to explain in advance, but it
works
when you're in it and you're there and you're like, this is silly and we all know it's silly. And nobody's actually being sexist to any of the like female players or non-binary players or anybody who's playing like a civilian as well, you know.
Sure.
It's just good vibes. What about you, Harry? Harold K. Knight. Oh. What was your favorite thing?
Harold K. Knight.
My favorite part of the game. So one of the things I have to admit I enjoy doing is seeing whether the players are doing what they're supposed to be doing. So a good example of this was at the last game. I was like, the players are deep behind enemy lines in French-occupied Spain. I wonder if they have anyone on guard duty. So what the encounter was, so to set the scene, the players were in the Viking village, which has like some watchtowers. It's got like a perimeter wall. And then there's a path, which is probably about 800 meters. And then it curves around a little corner. And the area around there, there's like some dips, there's some trees, there's some scrub land, but it's fairly open. So I timed 10 voltigeurs, who are basically French skirmishers, in right at the far end and went, okay, your brief is sneak into the camp, and then all at once, like, if you get, like, spotted, you know, fire some rounds off, have a little combat. If you don't get spotted, get as close as you can to the players before, like, firing a big volley. So I think how it kicked off, I can't remember exactly how. What I distinctly remember was one of the players who was like a regular redcoat. I was like, oh, the French are attacking. There's gunshots going off inside the camp. Oh, no. I can see one of my friends in that watchtower. Runs up to the watchtower, goes, oh, who's up there? And just hears, ha ha ha, le français. And is immediately shot in the chest, point blank, by a voltigeur. And managed to sneak into the watchtower inside of the British camp.
Oh, incredible.
Wasn't but it was because great because timed the boxing match to be with the voltigeur invasion.
Yes. So at the same time, about 30 minutes previously, I'd sent out an encounter which was, hey, all of you lower class, like characters, there's like a Victorian pugilism bout which is about to start. Go and like bid some money and there'll be some like fun times. They get involved in the boxing, it'll be a laugh. Which was all about, it was basically the other side of a big hedge from where the camp was. So all the, you know, all the regular soldiers, all the privates and the corporals all potter off to do this, have a great time. All the officers are sitting in the mess, not knowing that everyone else has left. So I just remember someone just being like, where are the bloody men? And someone responded with, I think they're at a boxing match, sir. just hearing this cry of, boxing! You know, like, gunshots going off. It was the new femme player. His name has completely escaped my mind, which is really terrible of me. But they did the full, like, run scream across the entirety of the camp, like, when the French first started firing. Someone like ran out was incredible. I'll protect you, get into the officer's mess, it's safe in there. Like, you know, people just running around in the dark, just like these random flashes of light as the French were firing in, like over the walls and like from these little like nooks and crannies. It worked super well. It was exactly what I wanted that encounter to be.
Oh, incredible.
The boxing match was wonderful as well.
The boxing match was a personal favourite as well. If you want to talk about the boxing match, feel free. Because I will happily hear more about the boxing match. Everything I hear from it, I just enjoy innately.
Just the first fight was fantastic. The big Spanish hero against, was it the Ox of Bristol? Throwing down fists.
The crew came up with their own names.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure like the Bell Ringer of Bristol was one or something like that. Something like that, it was very silly.
So the Ox won the first round. Everyone cheers. British superiority and all that. The Spanish are devastated that the champion had fallen. Then it was one of the riflemen who took out the British boxer. You had Circuit and Wren with fans in the background like, woohoo, punch him in the dick. And don't say that. And did those ladies actually say that? That's not the kind of language we expect from you. It was such good vibes. Money were being thrown around. You had your hype men. I believe the final bout was Oily versus another rifleman. So the Highlandmen went down. But
Oily, I think, yeah.
Yeah, you got the big flash of Oily's underwear under the kilt. It was a fantastic event.
And where were they when the camp was under attack?
They're having a lovely time, okay?
They're allowed a night off.
It's Tom. The army. It's specifically them.
Oh,
not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, maybe not. I've heard a rumor. Have you heard this rumor?
I have heard this rumor.
I've heard a rumor that there's going to be 16 Forlorn Hopes, one for every episode of Sharp. Is this correct? Can you confirm?
Yeah, the next one's Tulio's Gold, right?
Please, I don't want to have to do Sharp's Gold. No, no.
It's the best episode. Is that
we'll
the
have
one
to get
where
that big
there's...
box of Aztec gear, open brackets, yeah, dubious, out of the back, yeah, of the through store?
Yeah, yeah. We used to have a box that said headdresses in brackets, not racist.
wonderful.
They got eaten by mice over lockdown, I think. But
So
we'll have to get all the Trojan gear out, maybe.
are we having 16, or is the next one truly the last one in this wonderful chapter of Feast Your Eyes?
We've not talked about it, have we, at all?
No, not really. I mean, it's something of, I'm really happy to run more. I've got more ideas. But also, I do think that things should to some degree run their course. Like, I wouldn't want to run Forlorn Hope like for 5 years.
Yeah, I'm
very happy with it being super cool and super full of ideas and really just like dense with cool stuff, and then it having a like an endpoint, right? Rather than kind of like flog the dead horse, you know, it's like, oh, you're at Fools and Heroes number 3087. Like, how many new encounters can one team write to some degree?
It's me and all those poor traders who need help from the bandits, Harry.
Quick, we've got another Juicy Boys encounter. Quick.
Yeah.
What diseases the Colonel encounters. Got this week?
One Juicy Boys encounter of every episode of Shot.
It's on brand.
I'm happily so much better
when there's guns involved as well. Like, they simply don't work very well when it's just like, we're gonna find you and hit you with swords
In the dark. But when
you've got the sparks of the you know, it immediately makes the players the crew members realize that they need to stop talking about mayonnaise and
start dying horribly. Exactly.
I think
no end point.
Something I always do these days, purely because of one, because ever since you did Legio Nightmare, every single time I go to a LARP at Eversley, I'm like, Nightmare? It's just like, Forlorn Hope Nightmare? It would be certainly interesting.
Is Harry having
to
write Nightmare, run Forlorn Hope for the next 5 years?
I would love to write Forlorn Hope Nightmare. Forlorn Hope Nightmare is an idea which I kind of keep half joking about because I desperately, desperately want it to be real. Because I already have so many good ideas of exactly how I would do it. Because the nice thing is, it's 87 Aztecs. One for every episode of Sharp and the nice thing about Forlorn Hope, which I think would make it good for a nightmare game, is it's muskets, right? Flying lead nightmare. I've played all but one of the flying lead nightmares. But when you have 6 shots in a gun and you can have 2 guns, that's a lot of bullets. Yeah. When you've got one musket and it takes like 20 seconds to reload, things can run at you real fast in 20 seconds.
As someone who has played flying lead nightmare with 2 flintlock pistols, I can attest it does add to the drama of trying to reload at night.
Because obviously the French, the Napoleonic military tactic was always, the British are in a line. They can fire 3 rounds a minute. Us incredibly smart French people are in a column. We can run the distance between us and the British line in column after they shoot about 2 rounds. So we'll take these casualties because swords and bayonets don't need to reload. So why worry about it? Now imagine that. But rather than French people, it's, I don't know, something worse. Zombies, maybe.
Something worse. Ghouls. What's worse than French people, Harry?
Forcing ILARP to commission 50 of the bug suits from Starship Troopers. I put all my crew in them.
We haven't finished paying off the bears yet, Harry. We're going to use those bears.
Those bears won an award, Kitty. I don't want to hear an award.
Incredible.
Well, that's all the questions I have off my list. Is there anything you guys want to talk about or shout out or shill whilst you're on?
Shill.
It's the perfect time to shill.
Forlorn Hope 3, the third game, the one we've saved all the SFX budget for, it's titled Forlorn Hope The Siege. The players will be in a Spanish town under siege for the whole thing. It's going to be great. It's going to be real good. If you're interested,
it's going on the sale for the players.
The 20th of March at 7:30 p.m. on the Feast Your Eyes website, which hopefully will be after this podcast comes out.
Oh, yes, this podcast.
Okay.
Alex is a speedy worker and a godsend. It should hopefully be out by Friday.
Hopefully, we'll see.
Friday, that's wow, really that quick. Is quick.
It's great. There's no guarantees of it being this Friday.
Yeah, just a Friday.
Yeah, I feel I don't want to commit Alex to like having to release this.
This podcast.
I'm sorry, Alex. I love you.
27 days. One thing. Episode of Sharp.
What else am I shilling at the moment? I don't know. We've just while we've been doing this, I have press the button to release the information about another kind of associate game we've got running, which is called Eldritch Isle.
Mine and Morgan's phones have been going off with people already discussing it, so it's off to a good start.
Yeah, sorry. Max Berry, a good friend of ours, who's another regular at Isle Up Stuff and Feast Your Eyes Stuff and Empire, you might know from Dawn. He is running a kind of Cthulhu-esque kind of event, which is currently looking to be a one-shot, but with the potential for more, like a series of one-shots if it goes well. It's set in 1929, so costume for it is very charity shoppable, mm-hmm. which is the best thing about like early 20th century stuff. And I've got like 27 tabs open about it, and yet I can't find the one that has all the information for me to say. if you head over to feastyoureyes.events, all the information for all our games is on there. It's not .com or anything. It's literally .events, feastyoureyes.events. Nice. We can have a little look at all the weird stuff we do. Feast Your Eyes is kind of our personal business wing that we're able to do more crazy stuff without the kind of, you know, we can take more kind of financial risks with some of the concepts. Because we don't have to, you know, bring in a man with five children and a mortgage and lots of potential university bills to pay. He is the guy who owns ILARP runs the kind of film sim airsoft events. Josh Smith, who's our business partner for that kind of stuff. But for Feast Your Eyes, it's all
Josh
very
would
weird.
Never let me run a Napoleonic game.
Well, I hope you're happy. You guys are contributing to keeping me in poverty with all the extra laughs you've got on. It's like, I don't need any more tickets. Oh, these are
That's what we're aiming to do. the other two things, I guess, we've got the Portents, which is a game where it's like a fantasy game where you play the baddies. And it's kind of Monsters, Inc.-esque kind of fantasy setting where you're playing all cultists and monsters and griblies and necromancers and creatures who are going through portals and then going to like a lovely, delightful fantasy kingdom and then like harvesting the fear that you can generate from these lovely little hobbits and elves.
It's very Overlord-esque, if you know that game.
Yeah, but very
if you have a cool monster concept in mind or just want to make some cool monster kits, this is the game. Turn up as any like classic fantasy monster and it'll work great.
Yeah.
Here's a free one. Get four friends together, one necromancer and four skeletons.
You really, really want somebody to do this, don't you?
I'm desperate for someone to run this concept.
It feels like... It feels like Monsters, Inc. meets the board game Villainous. That's the vibe.
It's
I
very
get.
Much like
that's
that.
That's definitely the vibe. Yeah.
Got to go
yeah, that's
run
my
the fear of people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just And we've got a couple of Song of Ice and Fire games that'll be later in the year as well.
Yes.
One that was written by our friend Ren, who helped a lot with the kind of equality and diversity and like gender stuff with Forlorn Hope, and plays lovely nurse Mary. And that's the Dragon's Hunt. Information for that should be coming in the next couple of weeks, which is a little bit more. You play the actual main characters from Game of Thrones.
Sure.
And we've been going through the... we've been trying to figure out who the people that we... Because there's a lot of people who technically hold a lot of power at this particular year in the Game of Thrones setting. But some of them, very boring people to play. so we've been trying to figure out who would be more fun to be around. You know, like there was one that we added yesterday, I think it's a Lannister called like Geralt or something. he's just like the coolest Lannister. He's just a cool guy. Like, why shouldn't he be in it?
He has a silver sword and cool eyes and hair. He's the best guy around.
He's got great hair.
not Gerald of the Riviera.
but we're looking forward to putting a bit more information about that in the next couple of weeks.
And that's feastyoureyes.event. That's feastyoureyes.events. Check that out.
As we say, they're all terrible games. Don't go.
Yeah, don't go.
Go to them all.
Don't
so
bother. Please.
I should also say, we've got a few tickets left for Legio and also Second Breakfast, which are both ILARP games that are both award-winning and people have a lot of love for.
Yes.
But
yeah.
I think if... I think we're still in the at the position where if Legio doesn't get enough tickets, it might not be able to run. So we're really
go to Legio.
Everyone, go to Legio. Be Legio scary is, Roman people.
The best way to describe my love for Legio is just off my own back as a player who loves the game. I wrote a full costume brief for Legio, which is significantly better than the costume brief I wrote for my own game.
Isn't it just you don't need to wear trousers underlined 20 times on 20 pages?
Yeah, but then there's like another 20 pages of like his cloak and his picture of Johnny.
Incredible.
Thank you both so much for coming on.
Yeah, sorry. I can only apologize for the last, like, God knows how long of rambling. We just
no, it's great.
Absolute pleasure. We are the Tangent Podcast. Of yeah,
I think it's you get it's really funny how I feel like guests often keep us on track, but I feel like we've all just fed into each other this afternoon.
Yeah, sorry.
Perfect energy.
How many of us have got undiagnosed neurodivergencies? That
I'm diagnosed. It's
I'm only medication's diagnosed expensive.
I can't use that stuff.
But yeah, no, thank you very much for coming on.
Absolute pleasure.
And
thank you very much for inviting us.
Yeah, no, it's been great to talk about it.
And if anyone has any questions about Forlorn Hope, join the Facebook page. Feel free to ask me on there. I'm super happy to talk about it literally all the time. I can't stop thinking about it.
Find this man on the Thursday Night of Empire and ask him questions about the Peninsula War, and he will simply
find
drink
me when
20
I'm out
cans
at my local
something.
Shops and shake me and yell at me about hats.
I've fully got a picture in my head of that meme of that guy in a nightclub. Just next to some poor woman, just like talking about the Peninsula War.
I am both sides of that.
And I am also both sides of that.
You heard it here, folks. Just harass Harry Knight and Kitty about the Peninsula War.
Yeah, tell us facts.
Follow my Instagram account and harass me on there as well.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys. Yeah. It's been a lovely time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for being on. And thank you to everybody at home for listening. I hope you enjoyed learning about Forlorn Hope. And I hope you managed to get to the next one as well as some of the amazing events that these guys do. As always, please like, subscribe, follow wherever you are. Remember, I am legally obliged to read out every single 5-star review. So this is your perfect opportunity to put in an advert. Or anything else you want me to say into reviews on podcasts. I will read out no other review. So even if you want to slate us, you have to give us a 5-star review.
Please slate Dawn.
And I will read it out on the next podcast. But yes, we've also got a Patreon. You can find it at Fabletop. And then we should be coming back to swing with a few more events coming up. But once again, thank you very much, everybody, for listening. And we will see you when we are back. I'm not quite sure when we're going to be back, to be fair.
Depends if we want to do an episode about crewing on Forlorn Hope, yeah, we'll or you're going go. Into the woods.
Okay. Yeah, welcome to the forest. Into the woods.
Into the woods. I'm going to a rogue trader LARP as well at the same time. So there'll be interesting things coming up.
Yeah. So perfect. So, well, thank you very much, everyone, for listening, and we will see you again when we see you.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.